You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar, where every day's casual Friday. That means Monday is casual Monday. Tuesday, casual Tuesday. Wednesday, casual hump day. Thursday, casual Thurs. That's what we call it. And Friday, casual Shabbat. The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
It is Friday, May 11th, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. It's Casual Friday. You know what that means. Anything but casual Cliff Schechter will be joining us to wrap up this unbelievable week in news. Also on the program, it's Air America Alum Day. Liz Winstead will be joining us, ostensibly to be giving me a recommendation for what movie I should watch this weekend. Better not be Left of the Dial, or whatever that was. Whatever the name of that Air America documentary was. But she's also got a new book out, Liz Free or Die. She will tell us about it. But, ladies and gentlemen, before we can do anything, before we can hear from Cliff Schechter, we, of course, need to hear the Cliff Schechter theme song.
Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC. New media, public relations, and strategy. You want any of these services? You know who you gotta see. Cliff Schechter, Libertas LLC.
Yes, Cliff Schechter, LibertasLLC.com. Welcome, Cliff. I said, welcome, Cliff.
And I said, thank you, Sammy. How are you, my man?
I'm doing great. We didn't hear you because Matt's a little rusty. We took the day off yesterday and for a live show. Of course, we never take a day off. There's always a show, but we took the live off yesterday. And so Matt's a little rusty.
Well, you know, here and there you have to take a day off. I mean, New York, you've got those great beaches.
That's
you got to go check those out.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. Or you lie at home trying to get over a cold. Same thing, really, basically, in my life, being on the beach, just having a nap for 15 minutes with my kids at school. But be that as it may, Cliff, this has been an absolutely crazy week in many respects. We still have this specter of Nancy Pelosi and the Democrats sort of acquiescing to the narrative that we must cut so-called entitlements, basically social insurance. And then we have Tuesday's elections where we are reminded just how far to the right the Republicans have gone in getting rid of Dick Lugar.
Communist Dick Lugar.
Right. We see just how entrenched in their old world views the Republicans are with this Amendment 1 to the Constitution of North Carolina. We see that Scott Walker in Wisconsin, despite the fact that he has a challenger now, and despite the fact more Democrats came out to vote in that primary than in the Republican ones, he still is marshaling a lot of support. That's on Tuesday. By the time we get to Friday, President Obama has come out in favor of marriage equality. Scott Walker is basically his attempts to turn the campaign away from the fact that he just blatantly was attacking collective bargaining was thrown off because of his because of his, you know, his again supplicating himself to a billionaire.
This newfangled technology where you can actually capture what people say.
Under Mitt Romney again has just is in a what seems to be a death spiral. I mean, it's early to say that, but it's still astonishing. And all this has happened in just a matter of days. It's just been stunning. But before we get there, and I want to get to all of that, I know that you do a lot of work in the area of trying to diminish the amount of gun violence we have in this country, a country which, though we have far less people who actually hold guns than in the past 30 or 40 years, we have far more guns in this country. In other words, we just got a lot of guys who go around as if they're in, you know, sort of one of those late...
Very Clint Eastwood-y.
No, it's not even Clint Eastwood-y, because Clint Eastwood would just carry one or two guns. But I'm thinking about...
He wouldn't feel a need for so much backup.
Right, I'm thinking about, like, Sylvester Stallone in, like, one of those movies like Cobra, where he's got, you know, the whole thing is sort of this fetishizing the different holsters he has. He's got the ankle holster, the mid-thigh holster, the waist holster, the chest holster, the back of the neck, nape of the neck holster. He's got, like, 14 holsters.
You know what the porn is for these guys? Have you ever seen the old Arnie Schwarzenegger classic Commando?
Well, that's what I'm thinking, yes.
When he busts down the gun store and goes in and they just show the walls filled with all that stuff. Yeah, that's it.
Do you remember, exactly, Schmitty, when I told you you would be the first, the last to die?
I lied. How can you forget such classic
lines? I remember Commando? Are you kidding?
I would hope. I mean, you know, whenever my family's out of town, I still watch it.
I've got the whole script tattooed to my inner thigh.
You absolutely should.
It's in very small print.
You never know when you have to look at somebody and say, no chance.
Forget about it.
It's a wonderful, I mean, it's a great little, I love it because it emphasizes the love between a father and a daughter.
Exactly. I think that's the reason it did so well in the theaters too.
So, all right. But let's talk about, let's talk about this because, the Second Chance campaign, or well, tell us about this, because there's a petition launched to basically put some type of pressure on governors around the country to get rid of these laws which basically promote gun violence. I mean, I don't know how else to put it.
Yeah, it's basically it's called the Second Chance on Shoot First, because as we know, that's what these laws are, Stand Your Ground laws, and it was a campaign put together. It's a combination. It's Mayor Bloomberg, but all it's separate from the Mayors Against Illegal Guns campaign. This is specifically about Stand Your Ground laws, and it's largely made up of civil rights groups. It's the Urban League, Color of Change, the NAACP. In fact, Vote Vets joined in too. Just because they made the point that you know, in war they don't have the same rights as people do on the streets with Stand Your Ground laws. That's not the expectation in a war zone, just to give you an idea of how crazy it is. And so Trayvon Martin's mother put out what I'd call obviously a very powerful video for Mother's Day. This is her first Mother's Day without her son. Really sort of encouraging people to sign this petition.
We got that sound. Let's play that sound. It's Sabrina Fulton. Let's play this clip.
Okay.
I'm Sabrina Fulton. This will be my first Mother's Day without my son Trayvon. I know it will be hard, but my faith, family, and friends will pull me through. On Sunday, I'm going to say a prayer for other mothers across America who share this unbearable pain. Just like me, 30,000 mothers lost their children this year to senseless gun violence. Nobody can bring our children back. But it would bring us comfort if we can help spare other mothers the pain that we will feel on Mother's Day and every day for the rest of our lives. I'm asking you to join Florida by calling upon the governor of your state to re-examine similar Stand Your Ground laws throughout the nation to keep our families safe. I thank you from the bottom of my heart. Happy Mother's Day.
Wow. 30,000 people die in gun violence in this country on a yearly basis. That's stunning.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at the murder rate, winds up being about 11, 12,000 a year, which when compared to places, you know, you can compare it to most European countries, Germany will be like 300 and England will be like 110. I mean, it's so out of whack and out of proportion. Obviously, we've got a bigger population, but do the population numbers and you'll see that we're, it's, you know, it doesn't come out to anything close. We're so much more. So, you know, I think important and powerful. I mean, and I'll just say for a human moment that how impressed I am by her composure and that she can do this because, you know, I've got two boys and I can't even imagine being able to pull it together. I mean, she's been out in the media and talking about this and she's been such a force for good after what happened to her. And I mean, being able to hold it together the way she has, I'm very impressed. Let's put
horrible.
It that way.
Horrible. I it's almost impossible to sort of imagine something that sort of like just utterly senseless. And, you know, I mean, and I don't want to sort of like facilely segue from this, but there was another story of a teenage girl who apparently, I mean, it has nothing to do with gun violence, there's more obviously, you know, the implications of what's happened this week are just so strange the way they have converged. Because, and this doesn't have anything to do with being gay, but I just saw this story randomly. I don't even have it in front of me, actually. This just sort of brought it up, that notion of there was a, I don't know, 14-year-old girl who somehow got on the wrong side of the sort of social cliques in high school, and she was bullied, like just tremendously. By kids in the school for being a slut, supposedly, and we can see the damage of that sort of that meme going around in our society. But she, you know, in this day and age, texting, like somebody sent out like a group text to everybody or a group email in the school to sort of ostracize this girl. And her parents were sort of vaguely aware of it. They were trying to do something about it, but the girl was like, please don't tell the officials at the school because I just couldn't take the humiliation. She ends up killing herself from all this bullying. And, you know, you see that story. I think I read that story, I don't know, earlier in the week. It's just a horrible story. You see then the And again, it's one of those stories where having a daughter and, you know, seeing the daily sort of, you know, 6.5-year-olds, one day she's on the inside, one day she's on the outside of cliques.
I mean, it starts so young. That's what's amazing about it, you know. I mean, my son's only 5, and when you're going to his preschool a few months ago, I already saw, you know, it's amazing. Let's just say it that way.
When you think about sort of like all the things, all the dangers that a parent worries about with their kids – to have any extraneous sort of, you know, more senseless killing, you know, and it's all gets, for me, it gets all sort of like conflated with also, you know, the story of beginning of the week that we also were responsible for the deaths of 5 children in Afghanistan from a drone strike. You know, obviously there are places in the world where the spectrum of my kids died for absolutely no reason. On top of all the other things that we need to worry about, my kids died from a drone strike in the sky, or my kids died from their own hands because they were picked on mercilessly. You know, and then you see President Obama come out and really from a policy standpoint, it makes no concrete changes. Hopefully it will lead to that. But the implications of the President of the United States essentially saying, you know, people who are gay are just like all other people, is the implications of that. You wonder how many kids' lives, not only is it going to just fundamentally improve, but maybe save, because – And then you juxtapose that with the story of Mitt Romney being one of those kids who attacks other kids
mercilessly and committed essentially what sounds like something pretty close to assault with a deadly weapon.
If you jump on somebody with scissors,
I'm just saying, if you jump on somebody with scissors, you can do pretty grievous harm to them.
Sure, and
I'm not saying that was his intent. I obviously don't think that was his intent. But, you know, things happen. Sometimes when you're acting stupid and you're not thinking about it and you hurt somebody. And obviously, he seems like, from the accounts of the other people that were there with him, you know, and we've seen this before, by the way. I connected this because, you know, when I wrote my book on McCain, you know, his nickname in high school was McNasty. He used to pick on all the other kids. When he got to Congress, he still acted like this child. The reason one of the stories I broke in my book where he got in a fist fight with Rick Renzi, a then congressman, was because he kept referring to him as boy, because Renzi was the new kid on, you know, he'd just been elected and was a freshman. I mean, the bullying continues all the way up to that point, not to mention the four-letter word he called his wife, which is a form of bullying too.
Sure.
I don't know what it is with these people. Almost like the ones that need to have power. It's a power they need to have over others, and it's just, ugh.
I don't think that someone should necessarily be judged for something they did in high school. But with that said, you know, you look at all these other people who are coming out who participated in it, and they all have a tremendous amount of regret.
That is the key.
Look. You know, when I was a kid, I was not a pleasant person, I don't think. I mean, I was bullied in school, and then I remember bullying a kid in camp. And I don't know that I should be judged for my actions as an 8-year-old. But I think my response to it later in life, when I supposedly have some distance and some sort of level of maturity, that's really the point.
The key here is the lack of remorse. The fact that when he was asked about it, he was laughing. He doesn't remember it, which, you know, I love when these guys don't remember. I might have done drugs. I might not have. That's George W. Bush, of course. But you know, there are certain things that we all know you just remember.
I mean,
unless you've got some sort of a disease that has impaired your memory. And so he's a liar, and all these other guys seem to feel terrible, as any of us would. And again, I take it the same way you take it, because there are one or two kids at times who I picked on, and I look back and I feel terrible about it. You know, how can you not? But it's as you become an adult, it did two things to me. First of all, it's how you look back at it, and two, it's whether your behavior changes. His hasn't. I mean, You can see it when he bullied the woman not to have an abortion, you know, that story about him in his capacity at the Mormon church, going and visiting her.
Right.
And essentially, I mean, this kind of behavior, that was when he was an adult. How old was he then? In his 30s, his 40s? I mean, you know, this behavior of him going and bullying others and thinking he's better than others and that he's owed certain things due to the station he was born in life, the old saying about, you know, Molly Ivan saying about George H.W. Bush, born on third base and thought he hit a triple. It's amazing, and this behavior has continued. The way he talks to people, somebody wrote an article. They point out the way he talked to a reporter the other day, a woman who asked him about his feelings on the decriminalization of marijuana, and he just started reaming her. He hasn't changed, at least as far as I can tell.
No, and you know, I don't want to turn this into. I mean, I think this conversation's more interesting than just Mitt Romney is a douche because, you know, I think Mitt Romney is a douche. And
no, but it's how we handle it as a society,
exactly.
How we reward people who behave like he does so that they don't change.
Well, you know, back in the day, I called the American Family Association basically because, you know, I used to do these sort of, I wouldn't call them prank phone calls, but I would call to just let these people talk. And this one guy at the American Family Association, which was – I can't remember whose group it was. I think it was one of those guys, Tony Perkins or the James –
Brian Fisher or one of them.
Right. And this guy had written a review of the movie Shark's Tale, or yeah, I think it was Shark's Tale, making an argument that Lenny the Shark was written in such a way to promote homosexuality.
Those are my favorite ones. With SpongeBob or Lenny the Shark.
This is the same guy who I think he came out with that. It was Dobson's sort of outfit, and he was saying that, you know, like, Lenny the Shark cross dresses as a dolphin. He's a vegetarian. All this, and you know, I've got the audio. We'll play it someday, and we've played it before. People have heard it. It's hilarious. In the extended version, I'm talking to him, and it turns out this guy, I can't remember his name now, Ed something, was from Massachusetts. And so he's saying, yeah, you know, I like it better down here, you know, this whole, they're getting this whole thing. He was the one who brought up to me about that SpongeBob thing, because the SpongeBob thing was actually an anti-bullying incentive or program. And he's like, you know, look, you can't say this in public. And I had told him I was recording the conversation. It's just that he didn't realize that I was not, you know, at that time there was no liberal media, so I don't think he had anything to worry about, or he thought. He goes, you can't say this in public, but I think a little bit of bullying is okay, because it's the only way to make the kids normal. And I was just like, yeah, this is the mentality.
That's exactly their worldview. That's how you conform.
Exactly.
You don't have long hair if you're a guy, or you don't push for certain rights that you shouldn't push for, or you don't, you know, be gay. I mean, you know, that's you're exactly right. I think bullying, that's exactly it. That's their way of getting you to conform.
Is that not what Mitt Romney was doing? Like, you can't wear your hair like that. We're going to teach you, you do not stray from the herd. And that's what makes, you know, and you and I have been, I think, fairly critical, to say the least, of President Obama. And I've spent a lot of time on this program talking about the differences between progress and the sort of the problematic notion of progress in terms of social emancipation versus economic emancipation in this country, and how these are very different sectors. But it just goes to show that from a societal standpoint, there are forces in this society that have always and continue to try and not only to curtail the rights of those who they perceive as the other, but to make sure that they are continued to be perceived as the other. And it shows that despite the fact that nothing has changed in a sort of tangible statutory way for gay people on Tuesday or Wednesday when President Obama came out, there is just a sea change
there are many other examples I thought from the past, but this exactly sort of validates in a way, you know, what you and I were saying when we were critical of Obama. Because one of the things I was saying early on, when it came from anything from the side of the stimulus to the public option, was that he wasn't using the power of the bully pulpit. And having the most famous person basically in the world, the president of the United States, you know, particularly at their height of popularity, stand up and push for something, that can often move mountains. You know what I mean? That is covered by vast, you know, amounts of media nationally and internationally. It pushes people in marginal districts who you're more popular than to do things they wouldn't otherwise do. It spurs on activists and makes people feel better about things and excites them, which is an example of what this has done here. And you know, you just don't know the effect your words can have when you're in such a position of authority. And that was what had always bothered me, was this sort of saying, well, we can't do this. We only have 59 senators, not 60. You know, that kind of mentality versus the mentality of you stand up and you make it happen. You say it because it's the right thing to do. You give comfort to millions. You spur others into action. You change things. That's how change happens. That's how cultural change happens. And cultural change always leads to political change.
And now, obviously, the him coming out and speaking on this type of social issue is a little bit different from the economy, but not as much, I think, as some might want to argue, because I agree totally with what you're saying here. You know, and it's amazing, because the same people who, you know, will say, like, the president doesn't have any power, you know, the president doesn't have any power. You overstate, he couldn't deal with it because of obstruction and blah, 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 all on and on and on and on and on. At the same time, are praising what he's doing here. And you can't have it both ways. Had the president, you know, given a at different moments over the course of whether it was, you know, the stimulus, like you say, or the debt ceiling fight, had he given an interview and been decisive, and had he given an interview and said, look,
and laid down,
we may lose this fight, but make no mistake about it. If you cut government during a time of recession, it's going to hurt people. I understand that people say, you know, a family has to tighten their belt. Why shouldn't government? Because that's not the way it works. When families have to tighten their belts, it is exactly the time where government should spend more. And
when the government tightens its belt, you don't have a firefighter coming to you when your house is on fire.
You cut hundreds of thousands of teachers. You cut services. You create a more anemic recovery. I mean, on and on and on and on. And this is something that brings up the challenge that we face here, because, look, I don't know, and I'm curious as to your thoughts about how this developed. I don't know. I find it very hard to believe. And again, I don't care, except for more from a process standpoint, when we apply this to other things, because, you know, the president comes out and says this. I don't care what it took to get him there. I don't care if he accidentally said it or not. It doesn't make a difference to me, because, you know, the value is in the fact that he said it. But I don't believe that there was any plan to come out with this statement, you know, maybe 3 months ago, let's say, before the election. As of 3 months ago, if you had asked anybody on the campaign, hey, you guys are planning to come out for marriage equality before the election. Of course we are. No, there's no way. There's no reason why you would do that. I don't know if Biden was – they were aware that he was going to say it or not. I don't know if Artie Duncan was aware or not that he was going to ask that question on Monday when he came out in favor of it. I suspect there's a big –
I suspect there was a bit of a setup there. I'm not sure a while ago they decided they were going to do it. I think they were looking at some of the numbers and maybe lack of enthusiasm among certain groups and the fact that it was going to keep getting asked. You know, and he was being boxed in by the fact that people like Dick Cheney are out for gay marriage. And I think it was just getting to a point where, you're going to have to, I think. You know, and I didn't think that a couple months ago, but the speed with which things change. Once Biden did it,
But I mean, do you think that Biden was completely freelancing?
We need to cut the defense budget by like 30 or 40%.
Do you think Biden would say? Do you think Biden
next week it would be awesome?
Do you think Biden was really freelancing though? I mean, here's the I don't believe that they go. I don't believe that in politics you may have some long term plans, you may have some long term strategies, and you may have tactical things, but I think that you also react to what's going on, and it seems to me that the one thing the president learned. And the campaign learned, either by chance or not, was that when they go into social issues, Mitt Romney's in trouble. And so when the president comes out and says, or when Health and Human Services say, we're going to, part of the preventative care on the Affordable Care Act is to offer free birth control. Just, you know, there was I don't know how many tens of other regulations were involved in that. Colonoscopies, breast examinations. There's a whole raft of preventative care things that had to be offered free by insurance companies or reduction by insurance companies. They came out with the birth control one, and I think it did serious damage to Mitt Romney. Then a couple of weeks ago, you have Mitt Romney during foreign policy, sort of the one foreign policy opportunity he had so far in the campaign. He didn't have his chief spokesman out there because he had to be fired because the right wing demanded the guy's scalp because he was gay, openly gay.
Right. The point here, key point is that, and we've had this conversation, we've had it about, you know, abortion rights, gay rights, gun issues, you know, really all the social issues, exactly what you're talking about, which is, that they lived off of these for years.
The Republicans.
They were wedge issues because the majority of Republicans, because most people hadn't gotten there yet on a lot of these issues, and the demographics were such that, that old white guys who were then middle-aged white guys were still largely in control.
Yep.
But because of what has changed, which is their power is ebbing, it's certainly ebbing. You know, they're losing their power when it comes to corporate America, what people buy and sell, which is why some of these campaigns to get people to stop advertising on Rush Limbaugh and other places have worked, because companies that advertise on Rush Limbaugh or work with Alec need to sell their products, and the people who are buying products are the classic demo, right? You know, it's 18 to 54 generally, or 18 to 30, you know, whatever it is, but those are the people who are going to buy your products. You lose them, you're screwed. So that's why that stuff's worked. But also, even when it comes to voting, these guys, except for in a handful of states, are now outnumbered. And that's the reason why gay marriage has moved forward so quickly. That's the reason why there's going to have to be immigration reform. And these guys are boxed in on that issue, too. And they're boxed in. We talked about on who owns guns. You know, at the age of 70, you know, when you get up to that age, you find 50% own guns. You go down to the age of 18, it's like 17%. And on abortion, you know, on birth control, obviously it's not even a debate
right.
for anybody who's under 60. It's right. I mean, so basically what the if Democrats, this is the sort of thing that some who are still so timid on the left need to learn, which is if you talk about these issues in most places, I'm not saying there are exceptions. You know, there's certain congressional districts, there's states
right.
like Utah and Alabama
right.
where I'm guessing it's not going to. But in most places, you will win on these issues.
Well, certainly, you know, in a presidential election, I mean, I think it's clear, like the numbers are just such that this is a winning recipe for them. And so and what it does, it distracts from the economic situation. It means that they don't have to fight this out on who is more in the pocket of the banks. And, you know, the same week that we see this story starting off this week with how Obama's relationship with Wall Street has soured and stories about money. I mean, personally, I think that the president, any calculation coming out of the campaign about the value of coming out here, of coming out, forgive the pun, for marriage equality, I think there's two aspects. One is it boxes Romney in, it makes him seem more extreme. Because, you know, I just don't think that
he's
people,
not even for certain civil unions.
He,
so he's
right.
to the right
he
not only of
be,
Dick Cheney, but he's to the right of George Bush. And, I mean, he is boxed into a corner on that
to
one.
Fulfill,
now he's against 70% or something agree with civil unions.
Right.
So
to fulfill the box on the litmus test for the electoral base of his party, he has to move so far to the right that he's alienated those people in the middle who may, like, I don't feel it's that important. You know,
well, it's
like
it,
I may
be, said.
I may, you know, there's like, whatever it is, 49% or 48% or 42% are against marriage equality. But I would imagine there's like 7 or 8% solid in there who like, it's just, you know, I don't really care. But I mean,
I've come across plenty who don't believe in it and yet don't care.
Right. That I mean, I think
the political
that's,
work I do.
Right.
You
but,
know, I mean, and so.
But Romney can't stake out that position. Romney has to go way.
Remember that 20? There's like that 26%. I think that's it. That basically they're the ones that believe the world's coming to an end. You know that during their lifetime that we're gonna have the rapture.
Right.
It's about the same number that stayed supportive of George W. Bush. I'm telling you, there's a number there that whatever the craziest ideas are, there's a 26% that is always going to feel that way, and that is now the base of the Republican Party. And they're wedged, whereas the left, and I'm not saying this – I will agree with this. I'm just talking reality here. In the 60s and 70s was so far ahead of the rest of the country in some things that they had wedged themselves away from the rest of the country in a number of things. That is just the opposite now. That Dick Lugar spoke to that when he talked the other day in his concession speech, which is there's just certain things that his party literally cannot – you can't even say. You can't mention global warming. You can't mention taxes. You can't mention any sort of rights for gays. You can't, you know, I mean, you just basically get yourself into such a place where, you know, we're basically somewhere around, and all these issues I'm talking about are issues where it's really generally about 70% against 30%.
Right. And remember, Mitt Romney has a problem that, say, a guy like Rick Santorum wouldn't have had, because Mitt Romney still has to convince that 30% that he's one of them. Whereas Rick Santorum, everybody understood it. So if he had to tack to the center, it wouldn't be as much of an issue for him. All right. So, but wait, my larger point is this. So you've got, there is the pro and con list that undoubtedly was made somewhere in the campaign or at the White House. This is gonna box in Romney a little bit. It's going to energize our base. It's a good thing to do, which I just don't think comes into the calculation, frankly, in the elections. But I also think the big thing was there was probably a lot of money that was available to them. The strength of marriage equality activists have been very, very strong, but they also have the added advantage that there is a very strong donor class of gay money, if you want to call it, or not.
No, and you have There's to talk about that. I know it may not seem like it's politically correct or whatever, but the with where we are and where our politics is right now, where money is so important, there are certain groups out there that have additional resources.
There is certainly the amount – the gay electoral strength is not as or is definitely matched by the gay donor strength. And this is a big issue, particularly if you're supposedly not getting the same amount of Wall Street money you're getting. This is a big issue. And in this case, it works. You know, I'm glad that there's that money out there that's pushing for this. But what it just goes to show you, though, is that you cannot draw simple lessons from the agitation. And certainly there's been a tremendous amount of great activist work, whether it's Dan Choi handcuffing himself to the White House, whether it's Joe Sudbay, being sort of relentless in
and asking the president the question, you know, like he did at that meeting. I would say that
I got news for you. I know that question was asked of Obama by Joe Sudbay even before then. But aside from that,
I'm just saying that they've been the organizations fighting for gay equality, gay rights, whatever you would like to call it, have been the most successful advocacy group, bar none.
Definitely. They also have a twin prong of attack. They have that money. And so when we're fighting President Obama because of the way that sort of the regulatory agencies, you know, just take EPA relative to fracking. There was like four stories this week about how the EPA was just sort of anemic in the onslaught of the fracking industry, or whether it's about regulating the banks. We got a story today where JP Morgan, $2 billion. Just unbelievable that they gambled away this quarter.
They're awesome.
The activist energy is there. But there isn't the big money, because it is they are fighting big money. And so this is a real this speaks of a real, real problem that we have when we're looking to sort of stem the tide of income inequality, wage stagnation, cuts to Social Security. I mean, this is what brings us back to that. This is the challenge that we face when we have Nancy Pelosi out there embracing Simpson Bowles. Yeah, you can argue that she knows the Republicans will never sign on to it, but you're setting a narrative.
Well, I'm glad you went there, because I didn't want us to finish. I don't know when how long we're talking today before you decide you've had enough of me.
I think Liz is running a little bit late. So.
Well, good, because not that good that Liz is running late. We love Liz, of course, and hope that she's always running on time. But but I just think that's the thing, is that I'm working on my column on this right now, which is what's bothersome is the same week you're evolving, we're all evolving on gay marriage, we're devolving on what is the literally the single most important issue, I would say, in the Democratic Party has to their name. I mean, if you're talking about branding, if you wanted to ask what were the two most important things the Democratic Party did in the 20th century when it cemented itself for a while, anyhow, as a majority party, I think most people would say the Civil Rights Act and Social Security. And the fact – and I know what
– and the Civil Rights Act – you know, I had Alterman on, I don't know if it was last week or this week, I can't even remember now, but and he's not the first to say this. The Civil Rights Act presented also the biggest challenge to the Democratic Party over the past 35 years in terms of electoral. And
Yeah, well, I mean, LBJ predicted what would happen right after he signed it or as he signed it. I mean, so, no, there's no doubt about that. But where Social Security is just win, win, win.
Yep.
And here's what my problem is with this. This is like I, as much as I hate and detest Newt Gingrich, and I do, I think those both really mean the same thing, so I'm being redundant. You know, the one thing I'll say is he took a look at that Republican Party from the, you know, that had been there from what, 1954, I think was the last time they had had a majority in the House up through the 80s. And they were sort of, had become complacent in being a minority party. They'd sort of just expected it. They wanted to sound more reasonable all the time. That was really what they tried to do. And this reminds me of that. It just – it drives me nuts, this whole thing, which is Republicans are never going to take the deal. They're never – they won't even take 10-to-1, you know, cuts to revenues, you know. And so we can – we are the ones who need to sound reasonable. And I don't understand – you know, thank God Russ Feingold came along and said what he said, even though he's ruffled some feathers. He sent out an email saying this is unacceptable.
Yep.
Because basically, if you want to sound reasonable, here's how you sound. You step outside of Washington for a second and sound reasonable by supporting something that 80% of us support, you know, and don't believe should be cut. Sound reasonable by saying we spend more money on defense than the rest of the world and that we could go back to the Clinton tax rates when we only created 23 million jobs, or we could actually fight for a public option or do what other, you know, civilized countries do and have the Department of Health and Human Services negotiate prices for prescription drugs so that we would get a much lower price for them, so the government would spend a hell of a lot less on health care. We wouldn't be spending so much of our GMP for a crappier health care system than anybody else in the Western world. Those are just a couple things that come to mind. Or if we want to keep it with Social Security, get rid of the cap. Mitt Romney pays 0.5% of his income on, you know, into payroll taxes. Most of the rest of us pay 100% of ours. Get rid of the cap, and then, you know, we have no problem to begin with, but we'd only be able to pay 75% of benefits in 2036. Well, guess what? Get rid of the cap. We will be able to pay 100% of benefits forever until the next ice age, which may not be that far away if we keep global warming, but that's another story. You know, it's just that the fact that that Democrats feel like they have to sound reasonable, it's such a minority party mentality. We just need to sound reasonable. No, you don't.
Well, the point is, the reason why that is what is considered reasonable is because there hasn't been enough pushback by the leadership to redefine what is reasonable. But, you know, I see this, you know, everybody can anybody name me anybody associated with this administration or with the Democratic leadership at this point who has made a forceful case like you just did? I mean, whether it's a Jared Bernstein op-ed piece or whether it's, you know, I mean, he's supposedly to the left of margins of anybody who served in the Obama administration. I mean, this is the dilemma right now is that you have a Democratic Party, you have Democratic activists, or you have left-leaning activists who are now supplicated. So, hold on for one second. Who are now supplicated by this move, and they should be reassured. But the thing is that this actually requires even more work by the Democrats now on the economic side, because there are still, the fact of the matter is, there is still a wide gulf of people out there who feel like, what are the Democrats doing for me? I mean, I appreciate that they have now emancipated, or at least rhetorically speaking, are now in the right place where they're providing, you know, some measure of civil rights for.
But, and let me say quickly before I forget, Sam, I don't want to interrupt you, but you know what the irony of all that is? You want to keep some of those voters, older white men, who perhaps aren't happy about gay marriage? Tell them you'll protect their Social Security.
Exactly. That's exactly my point, though. And the thing is that on one hand, you have more people who come out and say, I'm going to vote for President Obama now. There's a lot of things I have a problem with. I'm going to vote for him. And will not agitate as strongly as they should for these other core values. Now, I don't know. The flip side of that argument is, okay, now this is off the table. Now we can go at him on this. So, you know, as I'm saying these things, I go back and forth. But it's going to be interesting to see, because certainly when we get to a time where these social issues are taken off the table, it's going to become more and more of an issue that the Democrats are not drawing a distinction in the areas that they should. It's not enough to say, we're supporting Stafford loans, and we're going to, but we understand, we appreciate the fact that we have to offset the $6 billion and it can't come from defense. Whereas the Republicans are saying we have to offset it, but it'll come from healthcare. I mean, that's just distinction. You know, you've got to go four layers down before you find a difference. And, you know, you have to say up front, we believe in the concept of having an educated populace, and this is what we're going to go.
The point is here that there is no deficit right now, except for the one we've chosen to have, right? Because closing it's easy. It really is. It's not even a challenge. A sound healthcare policy that would bring down costs, would allow the reimportation of drugs, blah blah blah. Starting to not arrest people for stupid war on drugs offenses. You know, I mean, there's so many different ways you could get out of this.
Cut defense, but you know what? Here's the other point about the deficit nobody talks about. If you look at the projections of what our deficit and debt will be, by the CBO. And you look at what they are assuming growth will be to get those projections. We've got a much bigger problem. And that is that they're projecting growth, essentially, that is a functional long-term recession, essentially, a 30-year recession. That's far more problematic than the fact that we're going to have a deficit or debt, in my opinion. But we're going to have to continue this conversation another time, Cliff, because you have, you know.
Liz has arrived, I bet.
Liz has arrived, and you know what they say about, you know, house guests and fish and all that stuff.
That's right. They do say all those sorts of things. And Liz is a lovely lady with a fantastic book, so you better get to her.
Okay. All right. Well, Cliff Schechter, thank you so much for joining us. As always, talk to you next week. And, folks, we will post on the blog at majority.fm those videos that we were talking about and articles and whatnot.
Thanks for having me on, man. Always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure, Cliff. All right, folks, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Liz Winstead, author of Liz Free and I. And, you know it from other things. Of course you do. All right, we'll be right back after this. Here it is, the Republicans' health care plan for America. Don't get sick.
If you think that's a fair ad, okay, then you're a Republican and an asshole. Have at it, Hoss. Be in that part. Despicable, man.
They're the bad guys.
Endless taxpayer bailout.
Yeah, that's not true.
When Obama won, the reason why we worked so hard for him,
we didn't want a garden variety politician.
Taking a stand, not just cutting deals.
That's what vision is. Yeah. That's what vision is.
The Best of the Left podcast. The best of the truly liberal media. Edited, organized, and mixed. Only at bestoftheleft.com.
We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. And having rushed back across, we were running maybe across bridges She looks like, you know, Mary Tyler Moore.
Avengers inspired.
Yeah. I didn't get a chance to see the movie yet. Oh, well, yeah, that's right. You jumped on my intro. I'm getting these messages. I'm running across. All I can think is like Mary Tyler Moore. That's all I can think for some reason. Like you were like running like Mary Tyler Moore. Ladies and gentlemen, she is the author of the just released. And I'm going to say right up front, I haven't read it yet because I just got it on my iPad.
Oh, thank you.
They got the Kindle version. Liz Free or Die. You know her from maybe you should know her from Air America. I mean, I imagine most of the people listen to the show listen to Air America. And you also know that she was one of the creators of The Daily Show, which I think people have heard of.
Yeah.
Liz Winstead. Liz, thank you for joining us.
Sam, thank you for having me and for enduring my I thought I could get home in 20 minutes routine that I often pull.
Well, you know, I know that you and Cliff probably worked this out so you could have a little more time on the show today, but that was fine.
Clearly.
So, Liz also has agreed to provide us with the movie recommendation this week. Now, Liz, I don't know if you're aware of this, but my daughter and my wife do not want me to have any fun and in any aspect of my life. So I'm not allowed to go out and see movies. I have to wait until they're asleep or I get up like at 5 a.m. to watch a movie on my Roku, which is my Netflix streaming device. But before we get to the movie, I want to hear about the book. Do you dish on Air America in this book?
You know what, Sam? I kind of don't. Here's what I do. I talk about the Guam people, mm-hmm, and the craziness, but everybody knows the shit show that is the sort of crazy machinations of what happened at Air America. But what people don't really know about Air America is the fact that when stuff went down, people stuck together and the talent. We have to remind people that Air America did not fail because of the talent. It failed because of horrible management. And so
five times over again.
Be said enough and hasn't been said enough that you and Mark and Janine and Rachel and Al came out of this place and we got great people out of it. Great people were on the air and great people left to become do even more interesting things. And that story hasn't been told. And I was like, I'll be goddamned if I'm going to let Hannity and all these other assholes reinvent what was wrong with Air America. And when I hear all these people writing, you know, they write articles supposing why progressive media doesn't work and all this crap, I was like, you are all so missing the point. The point was we weren't funded properly. That is end of story.
Are you suggesting that you cannot fund an endeavor with no money? Do you remember the story?
I'm going on a limb and saying if you cannot fund an endeavor without money.
My favorite story, and I know you know this story. Well, I don't know. I have a lot of favorite horrible stories from Air America, but was the story of when the whole thing fell apart, when supposedly, you know, like Al hadn't been paid forever, and the Guam guy sent his consigliere, who also was in the dark as to how crazy this guy was, to Al's place with supposedly receipts that the money had been deposited in the bank after months. And it was like, it was just an envelope full of newspaper. And, they opened it up like, do you remember, like, yeah, I know you know this, but back in New York in like the early 90s and the 80s, there were guys walking around the streets selling VCRs supposedly, where it was like wrapped in saran wrap and you could put your hand in the slot and you're like, oh, it's a VCR, and you get it home. And it was just sort of some type of like front of the panel, and it was just then a stack of newspaper. That's what this guy tried to pull.
Well, not to mention he constantly... He told us he had a brain tumor.
Yeah.
Or some weird kind of brain cancer that was not Googleable, which probably, you know, should be suspect.
That should have been the red flag.
Yes. And so anytime you would go, hey, it seems like our health insurance hasn't been paid. My brain cancer. And it was completely crazy. But my favorite story was the day we launched, Mark Walsh, who was then the president of Air America, and he's one of those guys that would wear like six outfits at once. Those preppy guys that had like an Izod shirt with a button-down shirt over it, and the
layers were very important.
Layers of Washington D.C. And somebody had sent us a honey baked ham on the day the show launched, and Mark Walsh didn't know what to do with himself. And I turned the corner, and he had just taken the ham with both hands and was unconsciously eating the whole ham. And I go, dude, what are you doing? And he goes, I don't know what I should be doing. And I go, maybe you should be washing your hands and getting out of the way. Like, it was so crazy because there were so many people who had no idea what they were doing.
Well, in that part of it wasn't even the worst part of it. Now, he had the good sense
To go
very shortly after that, because, you know, what none of us knew at this point is this guy who was talking about we've been capitalized for $30 million. We can run this operation for 4 years if we don't even make a dime, which, of course, wasn't going to be necessary. And then it turns out, well, he actually had like $500,000 in the bank and all these unpaid bills. And
a bunch of lottery tickets.
How many? Now, here's the thing, is that like you ended up going, you got while the going was still probably pretty good.
Dude, here's what's crazy is that, so after the Guam people were out, then a new group of people took over, and day one of the new people, and I'll never forget this, Rachel and I were interviewing Tim LaHaye on the radio.
Uh-huh.
And he was basically going on his whole rap about predestiny and that Rachel was going to hell no matter what, and that I was going to hell no matter what, and that you didn't have to give money to poor people because they were predestined to be poor. And so it was the very last interview of the show, and Rachel just goes, so can I ask you one last question? When the rapture comes, can I have your stuff? And he just was humorless and hung up, and we were laughing pretty hard. And we walked downstairs into my office, and John Sitton walks in and says, you know, the new management has decided that comedy doesn't seem to be the most effective way to be introduced into social change. So you're fired and you got to leave right now. And so I was like, first of all, right. That has been certainly not the case. No one watches The Daily Show or Lewis Black or Bill Maher or anything. And none of these funny people that are on the radio are successful. So, okay. And so I walked out and I was like, totally freaked out. But I know that happens in radio, right? I'm like, sure. Okay, you get fired in radio. What I did not expect to have happen, Sam, was that Rachel would be relegated to 5 a.m. and that our show would be replaced with Jerry Springer.
Oh, was that when Springer came in?
Yeah. Yeah, you know, there's things in your community, though. You know what? The one thing that's never going to happen to me is that Springer's going to somehow kick me out of a job.
Right.
And yet...
I mean, I got to say, though, you know, I don't know. I vacillate back and forth in sort of like calculating, would it have been better for me personally in many aspects of my life to have been gone, jettisoned at that point? Because the heartbreaking part is that scenario replayed over time and time again. From that regime, I get confused, but there was three other iterations or four other iterations after that where they continued to make the same mistake over and over again. Then they got rid of Marin, right? Yeah. I mean, you fire Marin. He's got a morning show in New York City. It's doing well. It's not doing great, but it's doing well.
Right.
Because, of course, you know, in radio, it takes 18 months before anything happens. Everybody knows this. You fire Marin the same week that Howard Stern is leaving terrestrial radio. It is essentially like, to me, it was like, okay, I own a small soda operation in Brooklyn. And Coca-Cola announces, we are going to cease selling cola. And so me and my outfit in Brooklyn goes, Well, I'm going to stop selling cola. Like, somebody announces, like, the biggest neurotic Jew who's, you know, sort of like, you know, semi-political, but, you know, it's comedy and sort of filthy mind and this and that. He's going to leave terrestrial radio. So we say, well, our neurotic Jew, who's sort of filthy, but a little bit more political, we're going to get rid of ours.
Right. You know what we don't want to ever do is fill a void.
Unbelievable.
That's right before us. I mean, there was endless decisions like that that were kind of crazy. And I mean, and they didn't ever understand the value. Like, I mean, I never knew about Coast or Atrios until you and Janine introduced us to this whole world of people who were really starting to make the difference outside of corporate media. And so those kind of valuable things were just lost. I think they were lost. Right. And then there was this guard of people that still had that mentality of, well, we got to have a lot of really famous people. I mean, I remember fighting that battle early on where it was like, hey, let's get Gloria Allred. And I was like, let's, how about not? How about if we never say that again?
The establishment think of liberals is very problematic. I mean, by the time, you understand, by the time the last regime was in there.
Was the last regime?
The last regime was a VC from Vermont, very nice guy, heart in the right place, had no idea what he was doing. And so he got rolled by the radio people who were scam artists, in my estimation. The last CEO, the only political donation that he made that I was aware of was to Mitt Romney in 2008. And did you not know that?
I did not know that.
No, a guy named Bennett. A guy named Bennett. And he was, when they got rid of Randy as this last regime was coming in. And say what you will, Randy was our biggest talent at that time. And she was integral to the operations. Was she difficult to deal with? Maybe. Not for me. But, you know, for Mark Green, maybe. But there was, I think, a lot of legitimate reasons. I think I was also problematic for Mark Green to deal with.
Sam, we're all just trying to make it work. Who wasn't? I was the biggest asshole there was sometimes.
Well, of course, because you know what? This is the entertainment business.
Right.
Same people do not do this. Right? Am I right about this?
You're totally right. I mean, that's the whole thing, is that you look at individuals and the greater good and you go, everybody is going to be artistic and difficult and has their own priorities. And none of that matters. What matters is, do they have the passion and the skill set to make good broadcasting?
Yes.
Deal with the rest. Your job as an executive is to deal with the rest. It's like if you went to a therapist and they complained about themselves all the time. Like, that would be a bad therapist.
Yes.
Your job is to, as a therapist, is to deal with the whack jobs and keep them, appease them how you can, make their lives as comfortable as possible, listen to them bitch, don't do anything about it, do something when you can, but to provide a place where they can excel at broadcasting, which is why you hired them.
And you know, and you know this because you have been a producer, you don't have to say names, of people like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've had conversations with someone I will not name, where I went into this person's office and I said, I know that you and I don't get along. I know that there is a giant personality conflict, but I promise you that every day I will work my ass off to make you look good because I have a vested interest in you. So let's have a detente about the fact that we both want you to look amazing.
Right.
And for that time that you are presenting yourself to the world, which is way more important than us squabbling in the stupid office, let's do that. And it was and that's what we did. And that's what you do.
That is the nature of entertainment. The idea that, like, boy, this person around the office, they're just rude. Or they come in and they complain about, with a coffee maker.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh. No kidding. Because you're going out there every day for 3 hours or whatever it is, and you're just essentially allowing the public to take pot shots at you and to essentially blur that line between what is public and private, and that is the nature of it. You know, I mean, I sat in office with Marin for a year. It was was one of the most tragic times of my life. But that's what makes him, you know, so compelling. That's why there's 300,000 people download his podcast.
Right.
Because that's the point. Of right. course, what is compelling for you for an hour a day or 3 hours a day or 2 hours a week or whatever, if you had to spend every day with it, would be difficult. That's why I suspect you read about, like, wow, none of these actors and actresses, these famous people can seem to maintain a personal relationship for that long. Yeah, no kidding.
Well, I know. And what's so crazy is the other thing that was maddening to me was that knowing that you're dealing with people like us, I would think, or what I'd like to do as a producer, is to at least remove the parts that I can that will set someone off, like investing in microphones that work. Mm-hmm. Or investing in a website that can handle people coming to it.
Do you remember what the website was when we launched? I remember this specifically because I got my sister to make a blog for me on movable type that day.
Oh, my gosh.
The website was a picture of a microphone.
Yeah.
That was not clickable.
Right.
It was just a JPEG that didn't have a link to anything.
I know. Well, that's why there was a bunch of Air America fans that started Air America Place.
Right.
And there was that whole hub and community that I spoke with.
That's where you got your podcast.
I still speak to those people. I'm friends with them on Twitter and Facebook. I've had meetups with them. They were so lovely to, they were like, because they were like, why don't you have your shows archived? And then they wonder why we're all snapping in some crazy. We didn't have a staple. My credit card, I don't know if you know this, was the Staples account. When I left Air America, I had a $7,000 credit card bill because the Staples account was my credit card.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So it was that kind of crap. We're like, do you think maybe
now
we
I feel
get
guilty
account?
About all that that legal paper I got.
Pay up, dude. But you know, and so that was the kind of stuff where it's like, you guys don't. You should at least be able to form an infrastructure, at least so that we're not as temperamental and psychotic, and let us just have our own weirdness and then manage that. But it was so, I didn't have an office or a phone. I sat on a couch in the reception area. I mean, the place literally was looked like a Superfund site.
I remember coming in. Sometime, I think it must have been in February of 2003, and you were meeting with writers. And I remember walking into this place and just looking at and just thinking to myself, like, I don't know if this is going to happen. I mean, because it was like literally it just seemed like it looked like it was in the midst of construction, except for there was no workers there.
Right.
And so, yeah, like almost like you could see, like, why am I seeing the metal studs on this wall?
Yeah.
Why doesn't there seem to be any activity as to, like, build it? It just seems like there's no drywall on this wall. Like, that's part of the motif. It was very strange. And it was, and the sad thing I thought was that you had people who came in and I actually wrote a script for AMC last year that they passed on, you know, they had commissioned, and then they decided they weren't going to do comedy, but it was sort of loosely based on Air America, not to the extent that one could get sued for, but based upon it enough that one might be able to make a case. And the sort of theme that ran through all of the owners there, in my estimation, was that there was always none of them ever came in with an idea about what they were doing. Not even, they didn't come in with a bad idea. They had no idea. And right. They always had another agenda that ranged from, like, I'm going to get invited to liberal Hollywood parties to, hey, this could help my political career to, this is going to justify why I had that trust fund because I'm now going to be able to do something. And the problem was they got suckered by guys who had a nice watch or a nice pair of shoes. So you had that original cancer, forgive the pun, of a con man running the thing. And it just seemed like there was just endless series of, you know, con men on one gradation or another to come in. Because the best Air America ever did was just like when there was, we were in bankruptcy and nobody was really running the place.
Right, right. Yeah, and it was like, and I remember having conversations where
like they would, and it felt like, okay, you're from Guam, so this is how things work in Guam. There's a half-built wall, and it is a sweatshop of sorts. But I'd say, when are we getting computers for the writers? And they'd be like, well, can't they just share? And I was like, no. And I was like, when can we have a writing space for the writers? So they threw them next door. I don't remember if you remember this, into the Penny Ante stock room, where guys were trading, you know, Penny Ante stocks and playing Nerf basketball while these guys were sitting in the corner of their weird office trying to write comedy with no internet or connectivity to anybody else at the network.
Yeah, I had totally forgotten about this. People have to understand that we were on a building on Park Ave South, I think it was, or right at Park Ave 34th. Yeah. And three quarters of this floor was taken up by a boiler room that, like you say, was basically pushing these penny stocks. And Air America must have rented without no walls up. Just
no walls.
Like a half a dozen cubicles in one corner. The office.
And clearly they just gave these Penny Ante guys some cash.
Yep.
Like there was no deal going on.
No.
You know, plus our offices were the ex offices of Showtime at the Apollo. Did you know that?
No.
Yeah. Oh yeah. The Showtime at the Apollo offices were that was what we took. That was the essence that we moved into.
So strange. It was such a strange time, but the point of everybody felt they were on a mission. I think was really sort of was, you know, particularly at that stage of the thing that everybody felt that we were on a mission because, you know, to a certain extent, there was people take this for granted, but there was no MSNBC. Keith Olbermann, I think was just starting.
No, it was all of that that woman with that throat. They were all covering trials and it was Tucker Carlson and Scarborough Country.
Yep.
And it was all of that weird stuff.
That MSNBC was not a liberal network. There was Media Matters maybe was about to start. There was nothing. I mean,
nothing.
There was no infrastructure. MoveOn was not in any way sort of prominent in the way that they ultimately became at that point. I mean, they were just like starting to hit the web. But they were still sort of coming out of that sort of grassroots. There was no infrastructure. There was nothing. There was just these blogs, which, you know, I remember thinking like, oh God, we've got to rush to get Atrios and to get Marcos and Josh Marshall and Bill Scher because, you know, by the time at the end of the day, everybody's going to get them, and there just didn't seem to be that awareness there, and it was a huge missed opportunity. I mean, I remember you're right about America Place, the Air America Place. They were actually archiving our podcast. We didn't have podcasts.
Podcasts were brand new. I remember interviewing. I think it was either Adam Curry or Alan Hunter, pardon my forgiveness, and it was one of those old MTV guys who had just started podcasting. And so we actually interviewed him about what podcasting was and how do you get a podcast and what does it mean? And it was like this super cool thing that we were like, wow, that seems like something that's super cool. And then
there was no YouTube.
Honey, there was no YouTube.
There was no YouTube. I mean, I know this is like sort of like saying like, I remember when you had to dial the thing, but it's amazing. I mean, it's impossible to imagine the infrastructure of the web now and not imagine YouTube.
Well, and I remember Sam, when we covered the Republican conventions in New York, and I don't know if, did you guys go broadcast out in the public for that?
I was in the on the floor and went out. Well, the protests, I recorded stuff, but at night, by the time we were on, there was no outdoor protests as much, I think.
Right. So we were at a restaurant called Porter's in Chelsea, and it was one of the like touchstone things where it was like cab drivers were pulling up by the dozens to come and say hi to us. All of the people who had come to protest came to the restaurant. Some people just started crying, saying, we didn't have anything like this at all in Akron. And we thank you so much. And we're so happy. And it was so overwhelming. It just put you into a perspective of why the country is the way they are and what's the matter with Kansas and all that stuff. And when you realize the lack of information that people had, and they were so happy to hear another point of view, and just as the time that they could actually go on the internet by us interviewing somebody else and finding out a little bit more for themselves, and when that really could start happening. And that was the part that was so amazing. And to have all these incredibly talented people from early in the morning until well into the night, it was, that part of it was really cool. And I couldn't be prouder of that first lineup. I just thought was like some of the best talent out there, just, you know, passionately working.
People don't realize just how sort of successful all that was. I mean, I know that as late as like 2000, late 2006, 2007, at any given time, you could have up to 30,000 people streaming Al's show. Now, these numbers are incredible because particularly at that time, I think it was like real.
Yes.
I'm saying like the player was real, which is essentially like was a virus that has gone away.
Yeah, it was real player. That's right. Yes.
And
right.
That's a tremendous amount of people.
Yeah. Tremendous amount of people having to find it. We had no advertising budget. No. You know, so this was that word of mouth, grassroots way that thing spread. And it was incredible.
It really was. And now, of course, your book, we could spend hours doing this, but your book covers a lot more than that. Whole series of essays, is it a memoir that seems to be,
it's memoir-ish in the sense that the essays are chronological, and I tried to pick sort of things that happened in my life that gave me either an incredible reality check reset, or some of them are just funny and dark, and some of them are, you know what? You go into writing a book and you're trying to figure out what people want to hear from you. It took me a year. I was supposed to write it in 18 months, and it took me 3 years because it took me the first year to sort of just justify that I had anything to say that people would want to read and give me their money to do, which is just, you know, we go through that. But what I realize is a lot of people go into this business and they think that if they reach some kind of goal, that then everything's going to be okay. And I kind of wanted it to be in a weird wake up call to say, you have to be resilient and like the shit. And there's no amount of, I did this, so everything's going to be okay. You have to really love your message, and you have to really know what you're doing and define yourself, because if not, the shit's too great and you'll drown.
Yeah.
So, and that's just it.
Are you there? Whoa. Let's try that again. What just happened? Bear with us for a second, folks. No, keep my mic up. Oh. They are. What happened? Here, let's turn up Liz's.
Okay.
We just lost her. Oh, my God. What am I going to do? Not get a...
all the mics are up, so as soon as...
What am I going to do? Not get my film recommendation? That was all leading up to an amazing film recommendation.
Well, I could recommend the film if it comes down to that, but I'll just recommend The Avengers.
Yeah, but how am I going to watch The Avengers?
See, you take the whole family. I actually pulled that off.
Take Mila to something like that.
Oh, no, she'll love it.
Dude,
it's really good.
No, Mila's very sensitive.
It's really good.
There's violence.
But it's all fantasy. It's superheroes. There's no blood.
Yeah, but it's all fantasy. It's still violence. What do you think? A 6.5-year-old can say, like, oh, she's afraid of pirates, dude.
What's wrong with her?
She's six!
My dad was buying me the Marvel comics by that age.
You're a boy!
Still.
My kid is sensitive. She's not like you. Not all.
And they're very bright, too. They're not like dark superheroes like Batman. They're like bright colors. It's the Incredible Hulk, big green guy, Captain America. Come on.
Liz is, I am. She said, call me back. Is there something wrong with my...
Did you run out of Skype minutes?
No. Hold on for a second. This is funny. I don't know what happened. The Skype just completely collapsed. I think I have...
Maybe Skype went down all around. Let me check.
Well, no, but she's sending me IMs. Mike... My internet connection is fine. This is bad. I don't know. Call ended. Internal error. What does that mean?
Well, there you go. An internal error. Something that we have no control over.
Hold on. She's going to send me a phone number. And we'll call her right now.
It's Casual Friday.
It's Casual Friday, folks. I don't know what to tell you. I you're lucky I'm even here. I've been so sick lately. I don't even know what to tell you. I don't even know what to tell you, folks. You can keep that up. We'll keep the suspense to see if the phone works.
All right.
Maybe the phone will work.
Just didn't want to annoy anyone.
I don't know what happened.
Liz.
Yes, I don't know. My internet just stopped.
Oh, all right. Well, it's weird because I'm seeing your IMs, but I keep getting internal error on the Skype, but that's all right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so let's transition then. Okay.
Yes.
Into what movie should we recommend? First off, people might not even want to see a movie at this point. They go just read your book, Liz Free
or
Die.
Yeah, you can read. Yes, Liz Free or Die, or you can get the audio. You can do whatever you want. It's
all pretty. Who does the audio? Do you do the audio yourself?
I do the audio myself.
I saw your I saw your ad. That was very funny.
Oh, thank you. Brian Unger is a major, major hilarious human being. And it was I was trying to figure out something to do. Like, they make you do this book trailer. Of course, they give you no money, right?
Right.
It's the same people who say you have to give people gifts who come to your wedding that I think invented this stupid idea. So the second you decide to get a book, they go, you know, no one reads books or buys books anymore. Like, so good luck.
Right.
And it was like, okay, well, here's my book trailer. It's also other things.
It was, it's very funny. We're going to post it at majority.fm. But,
oh, thanks, my dear. Okay, so I need a little background before I can recommend.
Okay.
Do you want a movie that's in the theaters or do you want a movie that you can get on Netflix?
Got to be on Netflix.
Okay, great. Netflix. So, explain to me are you an old movie person? You want a new movie?
I'm middle-aged.
Okay. Have you seen Sullivan's Travels?
Sullivan's Travels? No. What's that?
Oh, my God. Sam, you are going to worship me. After you are going to worship me.
Holy cow.
It is a Preston Sturges film starring Joel McRae, and it's my favorite movie, maybe. It's in my top 10 for sure. It might be my favorite movie ever. And it's about Joel McRae plays a comedy writer in Hollywood, and the movie is shot in 1938. And he's tired of the bull crap in comedy. And he thinks that Hollywood has sold out and it needs to do more compelling things that really focus on where America is. So he decides to go on the road to meet the common man, and he wants to make a movie about the common man. And he goes undercover and he lives with hobos. And it is the most amazing. It's hilarious. It's touching. It feels like it could have been made today. You're going to be blown away. It's great. It is great, great, great. Get it.
Wow. I just, I wrote it down. I'm going to be watching it this weekend.
It's astounding. And there's a great scene at the beginning where He tells the big movie executives that he wants to do this, and they're like, How do we market it? We really think this is a good idea if we can really market it. And so he's like, I don't want you to market it. I want to go and really experience this. The next scene is a bunch of publicists in a bus following him on his journey.
That's funny.
And you're like,
This must have influenced Albert Brooks, like when you see, like...
Oh, my God, yes. And it's influenced. It is, and it's just so incredible how in the late 1930s, there was still writers going, you people don't know anything.
Right.
You people don't know anything, and you're all sellouts. And it takes a twist and turn that's pretty amazing, and it celebrates, you know, sort of the joy of adding humor into your social message. And it tells a story that could be told right now, and it's so fascinating to watch it being told, whatever, 70 years ago. It's great.
Well, I will check it out. Liz Winstead, thank you so much for joining us, and good luck with
it. Okay, can you, when you watch it, I want to come back on your show, and I want to talk to you about it.
All right, we'll do this.
Fantastic. Thank you so much, Don. Keep up the good work. You're one of the gems out there.
All right, we'll talk to you soon. Thank you.
Great, bye-bye.
All right, folks, we don't have much time left in the show today.
So it's a Freebie Friday?
Freebie Friday, it looks like.
It's unbelievable how much these freeloaders get.
It's unbelievable. But I mean, I am almost giving up at this point. I don't know what I'm going to do. I got to find another job. Because you can get members. You can become a member at majority.fm. Supports the show. We don't really have advertising on occasion. But the main no, it's just pure goodness constantly. I'm not paid by any liberal organization. Granted, George Soros picks up my health care and also occasionally sends me coupons to go to Outback Steakhouse. And no, George Soros, I wouldn't take his money. Unless it had like a bunch of zeros attached to it, in which case then maybe I would contemplate it. But it's only our members who support this program. We get some coffee from justcoffee.coop, and we get a little bit of kickback every time you guys buy a coffee, tea, or chocolate with the coupon code MAJORITY. It's fair trade. It's organic coffee. For me, it's worth promoting them just to get the coffee. That's how good the coffee is. Plus, it's a great company. Plus, they're in Madison. All good. And we get a little bit of money kickback on Amazon, but, only use that if you buy crap through Amazon. Don't go buy, you can click on the link and then we get a kickback, but, you know.
Certainly, if you're planning on making a big purchase, please do it through Amazon through our link.
If you buy it through our link, we get a little bit of kickback. And... but becoming a member is the best thing you can do. This story about, let me just do this because I want to talk about, we had the Democratic primary the other day in Wisconsin where, Tom Barrett, former mayor of Milwaukee, I should say, mayor of Milwaukee, is going to be running against Scott Walker in the recall of Scott Walker. He got a lot of votes, Walker did, in an uncontested, more or less, primary. There was another sort of protest candidate, but not basically uncontested. Part of the reason why some people have speculated that Walker is doing well is because just how divisive and just how mean-spirited and just how much the legislation that cut collective bargaining for unions was not about balancing the budget, but in fact attacking people's right to collectively bargain. That aspect seemed to have gotten lost over the past year. But this video, I think, is going to bring it back. This video was taken. Apparently, neither one of these people, Scott Walker nor the millionaire who is funding Scott Walker in this video, billionaire Diane Hendricks, were aware of how video works. Because this is Scott Walker before he introduces the legislation that was aimed at destroying collective bargaining for unions. It was on January 18th, 2011. This is Walker's largest single donor and the largest known donor to a candidate in state history. Here's their conversation. Remember, Scott Walker said, we have to destroy the collective bargaining of unions, not because I have a problem with unions, not because I want to make this a right-to-work state. No, no, no. It's only to save the budget. Now, of course, it didn't save the budget, but this is watch this clip.
Hey, Governor Walker.
How are you? Good to see you.
Oh,
thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Hi, Mary Wilbur.
Good to see you.
Good to see you. Yeah.
Any chance we'll ever get to be a completely red state and work on these unions?
Oh, yeah.
And become a right to work?
Well, in fact, the big thing
we're... What can we do to help you?
Well, we're going to start in a couple weeks with our budget adjustment bill. The first step is we're going to deal with collective bargaining for all public employee unions.
Right.
Because you divide and conquer.
Oops. So much for that lie. You know, is there anything more perfect than the multiple occasions we have seen Scott Walker now completely shove himself into the to those cavities where the sun don't shine of billionaire supporters, whether it's a fake Koch brother or this billionaire whose agenda is essentially, what can you do to make this state more Republican? What can you do to break the backs of collective bargaining? Well, we're going to divide and conquer. We're going to start with public sector unions. And then we're going to go on to private sector unions, right? When you want to make this state a right-to-work state, you're not just talking about collective bargaining for public unions. You want to destroy all unions. So hopefully this will re-energize stuff in Wisconsin. I think Wisconsinites care if their governor is working for them as opposed to a billionaire. I guess we'll find out. J.P. Morgan's proprietary debt trading desk loses billions. Tell me again how Obama's second favorite criminal banking cabal trade $200 billion in synthetic derivatives while only having a market cap of $150 billion. Where's the SEC? Where's the CFTC? You idiot Keynesians are going to... What has this got to do with Keynesians? I can believe that money going into the economy creates economic activity and not believe that the money should be given to banks. Congratulations on Obama joining the rest of the 20th century. Mike Malloy did a great job last night scoring the president idiot over his reluctant acquiescence on sexual equality issues while at the same time enjoying his three-fifths constitutional right that we were fought for so vehemently. But hey, Obama got his. That's all that counts. Romney insists marijuana is a gateway drug, but then to Mormons, coffee and tea are gateway drugs. That makes you and your sponsor just coffee drug dealers, Sam. What? Gawker is reporting. From the Orlando News, that the seller of a gun range target has sold out in 2 days. The target is a picture, essentially, or an outline of Trayvon Martin.
With Skittles and iced tea being held by the outline's hand.
Basically a hoodie, you can't see the face, with Skittles and iced tea, and then a huge target on the chest. It's America, folks. That's the way you make money. My main motivation was to make money off the controversy, said the seller of the target. Unbelievable. The Orlando-based news station, this is Local 6 in Orlando, says it spotted an ad for the target since removed on a popular firearms auction website. Yeah, you know why they removed it? Because so many people bought it. There's a sickness with these people that goes beyond, like, I believe in the Second Amendment. It's the same sickness that goes beyond the sanctity of marriage. You don't care about the sanctity of marriage when you vote to deny gay domestic partners rights to visit each other in the hospital. You don't care about churches. Churches are never going to be forced to marry anybody they don't want to marry. You can't force somebody. You can't force a rabbi to marry a Jew and a non-Jew. You can't force a Catholic priest to marry a non-Catholic. You can't force them to marry couples they don't feel comfortable marrying. It's absurd. Everybody knows that's not going to happen. It's just their mentality. There's a sickness here that goes beyond their sense of their rights. There's a sickness. Unbelievable. European bank official, you want to laugh? JP Morgan is advising us on risk right now, says Bush in chains. If it was that traumatic, you former Air America people should really consider private group therapy instead of making us listen to it. Rye Pop Phil. When I was younger, I did things that were wrong that I'm sure things Obama did he was not proud of when he got older. But the lesson he brought forward from his youth caused him to choose equality and acceptance. Romney recently disposed of a person in his campaign that was gay. So the lesson he brings from his youth, that condescending judgment and hatred and bigotry, thinking that he's better than others. That's why acts in his youth are an important measure of his character. I remember when parts of the production staff were tasked with constructing office space for talent at Air America. Also, in the same period, Air America and the expansion of Clear Channel was buying up Left Talk or Balanced Talk stations, kicking you guys, Tom L. Et al., off the air, and Ed refused to go. Air America, but when you called him in when he was with Jones, you couldn't mention you were listening on satellite radio. Interesting. Day-Day Fruit. Oh, yes, Sam, I remember Springer replacing Liz and Rachel. I was crushed, but hoping that it was broaden the audience for Air America. I died with you each time the schedule changed and someone was jettisoned. All the blogs and sites that flourish today, Coase, Atrios, you and others, but it was you, I remember having each of those bloggers on one night each week, and that's how Marcos even got started, was from your exposing him. I never missed you and Janine except when I had to work. There were heady days when it was you covering for Randy, doing your own show with Janine, and then sometimes filling in for Mike. That's why I've been saying for years, there is no such thing as too much Sam Cedar. You rock the mic 7 hours a day. So often one winter, I subscribed to SiriusXM when I was away from my computer access. I had no idea how tough things must have been. I was dependent as a freaking embryo and addicted to all of you, but I guess you were on more often than anyone. You and Mike were my sanity and my needed fix. Hope you're feeling better. Thank you, Day-Day, for it. Very nice. Macintologist, Air America was managed by a series of zombies, or maybe it was like a woman whose parade of husbands all ate their children. It was kind of unbelievable, indeed. Lawyer Matthew. I would go see the Avengers upstate with you. Henry already saw it. I'm not allowed to go out and see a movie. Jay, Sullivan's Travels is my favorite film, too. It'll make you feel really good about being in the comedy business. Best suggestion ever. What pictures? Sam, the movie the main character Sullivan's Travels wants to make, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which the Coens actually made into a movie. Interesting. 2 years old. I'm sorry I'm freeloading. Mid-June will change that. I used to give monthly to Bart Cop for 18 months. And to Franken for 12 months, but things got tough. Tell me why that movie might have influenced Albert Brooks, one of my total faces, faves maybe. The Liz segment was some of the greatest radio I've heard in a while. Total faves, not faces. Go watch American Family, I think it is. No, Real World. Real Life, that's what it is. Albert, which is a film that influenced me tremendously, but real life. And Bush and Chains will get the final I am of the day. Edward Severin, co-founder of Facebook, just renounced his U.S. citizenship. By the way, the new Avengers movie sucks.
That's why it's the highest grossing weekend of all time.
And John P. Kirk... Sorry, Bush and Chains, not the last of the day. Those Air America days were a turning point, and the fact that when you became the top performer proved by ratings, they fired you, I still can't understand that. What the? Well, I was never the best on the network, but I was best in that time slot when I took over for Springer. Shank, zero hedge, zero hedge, zero hedge, zero hedge. He's mad about that Avengers comment. All right, folks, see you on Monday. To get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there.
guess I might have lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know how far the detour takes you? Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the man's not gonna kick in. And my shifted in and out of gear.